Well, I'd like to welcome you to a new semester of Paul A. Olson Seminars in Great Plains Studies. We believe we've scheduled some excellent speakers with some thought-provoking subjects. Well, as the 10th anniversary approaches of what's become known as 9/11, we're honored to have Barbara K. Robbins speak on Healing a Nation, Native Americans' Response to 9/11. Robbins is Associate Professor of English and Native American Studies at the University of Nebraska at Omaha. She grew up in eastern Montana along the Yellowstone River and earned a Bachelor's of Fine Arts with a minor in Native American Studies from the University of Montana. She continued her studies at the University of New Mexico, received her MA in Rhetoric and Native American Literature, then went on to the University of Oklahoma, completing an interdisciplinary PhD in Native American Literature, Fine Arts, and Anthropology. She has been teaching and conducting research at the University of Nebraska in Omaha since 1999. Please welcome Professor Barbara K. Robbins.
Well, thank you so much for coming. It's wonderful to see such a nice crowd. Thank you to the center of Jim and Kim for all the help in getting this set up for me. And my colleague John Price couldn't be here, but he deserves special thanks for helping to coordinate some things behind the scene, and I'm very grateful. I want to thank my parents, Rob and Eileen, for not having the boo hiss signs, and for coming all the way down from Montana to participate. And of course, my husband, Steve Walker, who's been supporting me, putting up with the complaining, traveling, doing all those good things. I'm very, very grateful. And I also want to make sure to apologize to those elders who are here today for any errors that I'd be making in representing traditional practices and tribal history. I do want to thank you for coming in and for listening to my words. I hope this work has merit, and I want to listen to your comments, corrections, and directions, if you should care to give them with me. I appreciate all the support I've had as this project has grown over the years. It is important that we acknowledge this day, this time in our history, for the impact of these events is ongoing. A recent New York Times article cited the psychological impact, according to figures compiled by three New York City health organizations. At least 10,000 firefighters, police officers, and civilians exposed to the terrorist attack on the World Trade Center have been found to have post-traumatic stress disorder, and in a kind of mass grieving, many of them have yet to recover. So that's just New York City. Doesn't include Shanksville. Doesn't include the Pentagon. And certainly doesn't account for those of us extended out who still may have some residual emotional impact. In September of 2004, Jewel James and the House of Tears Carvers presented their third and final gift of totem art to commemorate the 9/11 attack on the Pentagon. Among the three sites, five poles were gifted, honoring those who gave their lives in the line of duty or as victims caught in the circumstances of terror. Three cross-country journeys were made in a pickup truck, pulling a trailer loaded with one or more poles from the Lummi Nation in Washington State. All across America, hundreds of people paused to reflect, to touch, to pray, and to share. For Kurt Russo, one of the organizers, the journeys were transcendent. There would be a moment when the totem pole seemed suspended between two lines of people and their outstretched arms, their hands on the totem pole. White hands, black hands, brown hands, arms with tattoos or in Native American ribbon shirts, in short sleeves or in dress coats. Relieved of the burden of otherness, people belonged unselfconsciously to each other and the common moment in hand through silent contemplation or through prayer. For all of the House of Tears carvers, the poles became opportunities to give not only the possibility of healing, but lessons in basic humanity. The poles moved people. And it was that reality that caused people to ask the carvers, why? Why would Indians offer these gifts when the United States government has committed so many wrongs against them? James gave a very typical answer over and over. Native Americans know what grief is. We know what pain and suffering is. We know how to put our arms around another. We depend on each other to heal. Thus far, I have identified about 22 artists and 7 writers who have created at least one work as a direct response to 9/11. The 12 or so artists I'll be representing today have been selected for their additional concern that their art contribute to healing. I should also mention how these works are healing in that art is not typically a treatment for physical maladies like broken bones. We do have many anecdotes for how art heals the emotional, psychological self involved in artistic process. This study examines the role of art in the emotional, psychological healing of others as part of a growing body of research involving art and artistic process for the treatment of PTSD and what is more frequently being called historical trauma, or that wide-scale intergenerational suffering that permeates many Native American communities. The mediums in this show are pretty varied. There's wood carving, rug weaving, silversmithing, beading, installations in art galleries, painting, sculpture, creative nonfiction, fiction, and poetry. The challenge of discussing these works has collectively has led me to create some basic categories to offer some insight into the relationships between artist, object, and interpreter that create circumstances for healing. So the works I have today represent three categories. The first is working art, so-called by Jewel James, restoration of the universe, based on folkloric aesthetics, and America as home, indigenism as inherent in nationalism. And from time to time, I'm going to call attention to what I call a basic premise. These are just to clarify or unite cultural, disciplinary, or an indigenous perspective. So my purpose today is to share a perspective, a reading of about a dozen works that arises from the ways in which we think about art and the relationships to healing. One thread of my thinking is from Jewel James, who creates art that he directs to be healing. Another thread is from the growing body of literature for the treatment of trauma that increasingly recognizes the importance of narrative and artistic processes for treating PTSD. Still, other threads are from the traditional artistic and healing practices of Native Americans. No doubt there are other approaches and interpretations to any of all of the works I'll be sharing with you, but I would like to discuss how each contributes to our collective process of caring for each other. So the first premise, art pain abolishes language. Elaine Scarry states, physical pain, unlike any other state of consciousness, has no referential content. It is not of or for anything. It is precisely because it takes no object that it, more than any other phenomena, resists objectification in language. Judith Herman elaborates, the core experiences of psychological trauma are disempowerment and disconnection from others. Recovery, therefore, is based upon the empowerment of the survivor and the creation of new connections. Recovery can take place only within the context of relationships. It cannot occur in isolation. Fortunately, art offers languages, verbal and visual, building blocks for recreating a whole individual and or community. Story, ceremony, symbol, all contain these components of human connection and encourage empathy. In this fundamental construction, art creates the potential for healing by offering the sufferer, disconnected from others and even a complete idea of self, the images and sometimes even specific words for reassembling a whole self. In these poles, Lemmy iconography is the most apparent visual language. James draws upon historical references, symbols, and popular narratives to call attention to a shared American history. So we have a bald eagle at the top. The bald eagle is spiritually sacred, and it represents the original 13 colonies. The pole is 13 feet tall, 1 foot for each original colony. The eagle is male, representing Father Sky and all fathers killed in the attack on the Twin Towers. There are 13 arrows in this design that represent the 13 lessons learned by the 13 colonies from the Iroquois Confederacy, including that concept of strength through unity. There's the bear mother here and her child, representing the female aspects of creation and all the mothers killed. Her bear child represents all the children victimized by the attack, with the nurturing vision of healing. Just so you know, in Lummi culture, the bottom position is not an inferior position. So this in no way suggests that the femininity is somehow subservient to masculinity. And also the colors here, there are four colors, red, white, yellow, and black, four races of humanity who were victimized. According to James, for the Lummi, carving represents a mythology rather than identifying a clan system. You are supposed to know the stories. The art's main message is that it's time for healing. It's time to be proud of who you are. We hope the art depicts that. Second premise, for healing to be realized, pain must be acknowledged. To refuse acknowledgement is to aggravate the pain. Clinical psychologists Eduardo and Barney Duran found that many of the dynamics in effect in the Jewish experience are similar to those of the Native American experience, with the crucial difference that the world has not acknowledged the Holocaust of the Native people of this hemisphere. This lack of acknowledgement remains one of the stumbling blocks to the healing process of Native American people. The inherent denial keeps the colonial perpetrators trapped in an aura of secrecy and continuing alienation, since their acts continue to haunt them with guilt and existential emptiness. Psychiatry also recognizes that hearing the pain of another has consequences for the listener. Herman tells us the therapist's role is both intellectual and relational, fostering both insight and empathetic connection. However, trauma is contagious. Within patient-therapist relationships, there's transference, that's the hearing of pain, and countertransference, the receiving of those that are sensitivity to that pain. They're unavoidable due to our human limitations within the clinical psychological relationship, but they are also potentially destructive of the healing process. Eduardo Duran particularizes the felt pain in Indian country as being rooted in America's colonial history and held by generations of individuals at the core of their being, all the while being incapable of articulating that reality. Duran called it the soul wound, more commonly today referred to as historical grief or historical trauma. Among the healing acts is the ability to, in Scarry's words, speak on behalf of pain. She specifically lists medical practitioners, lawyers, social workers, and artists as possessing the skills and responsibilities of articulating what those in pain cannot express for themselves. James is cognizant of the soul wound, historical grief among Indian people, and draws upon it as he conceptualizes his pole as having the capacity and the directive to heal. He calls his form of art working art, art that exists to heal others. The honoring pole commemorates the crash of Flight 93 in the field near Shanksville, Pennsylvania during 9/11. Originally hijacked to crash into the White House, passengers fought back and took it down, killing all aboard. So once again, we have a pole that is 13 feet tall, only this one has an additional has an additional 8 inches on the ears because there were 8 delegates in the original Constitutional Convention from Pennsylvania. So, and this one also has, of course, the bear, with the two human figures in there. The two people with purple hearts for the spilled blood in all wars and, of course, during 9/11. The human figures, one man and one woman, represent the flight crew. Jewel chose to associate people with bears, a traditional warrior symbol, because the people aboard that flight had to have the strength of a bear to do what they did. As outlined by Herman, there are 3 phases of recovery after a traumatic event. Reestablish primary security and safety. Reconstruct a personal story and mourn the traumatic loss. Reconnect to society on a social level. James places his confidence in the willingness of each person to choose healing and thus accept a place within the larger community. He says, healing begins with the individual. It's an individual thing. For some, it will be the colors, for others, the eagles. Combined with our songs, stories, and dance, they complete our cosmology, but everyone will find their own symbolic meaning in it. James identifies the crucial fact that to rectify the sense of disorientation, to engage again with life, the sufferer needs to feel complete in of him or herself and with the world at large. I believe this is the process that Carl Morrison refers to as the empathetic participation, or completing the hermeneutic circle. Coming to a work of art and engaging even portions of that whole creation establishes a connection. As we approach a piece, we interact with that object, artistic object, and even the pieces that might resonate with us, that create an understanding of that whole. And in doing so, we interact with our own personal identity in which those gaps created by trauma have been filled. In so doing, the individual is once again capable of seeing the self as whole. Language in the form of stories has been returned. There is hope. There is healing. America still resists its history with Native peoples and prefers to deny any role as perpetrator. However, James acknowledges that there is pain in both Native American and mainstream American communities. James takes on the responsibility of demanding acknowledgement by offering meaningful gifts. This piece, Liberty, Freedom, and Sovereignty, was dedicated at the Pentagon in 2004 and immediately moved to the historic Congressional Cemetery, where it has since become a major draw for tourists, in addition to the graves of historically significant individuals. This series of poles suggests the frame of a longhouse and one in which all Americans live as one family. So Liberty and Freedom are the two uprights. Liberty has the sun on it, which the Lummi chose as the representation of their own tribe. And then this is a little hard to see, but there's a turtle, and the turtle's back has a moon face on it. And I was told that by Jewel that the carvers originally did not have a design for a turtle. It was just supposed to be a moon. And they just really felt strongly there had to be a turtle. Had to be a turtle. So they put a turtle on there. And when they got then to the East Coast, they discovered that when the Piscataway, the host tribe that accepted the poles, the tribe, the Piscataway said, oh, you put a turtle on there. That represents us. So it was like meant to be, which is so typical of the stories that get told about any of these poles. And then, of course, sovereignty is the crossbar on top. So as members of one family, the viewers are challenged to consider the U.S. relationship to tribal nations. American policies have not always protected Indian liberty, freedom, and sovereignty. The habitual silence that prevents discussion and instruction is revealed as James demonstrates that American liberty, freedom, and sovereignty would not exist without the involvement of Native peoples. In this case, without the assistance of Native Americans serving in the armed forces, which is recognized as substantial. The U.S. Navy estimates that on the eve of 9/11, there were nearly 190,000 Native American military veterans. And historically, Native Americans have the highest record of service per capita when compared to other ethnic groups. This is a detail of the sovereignty pole, which Jewel describes as the war male eagle and the female peace eagle here. And the divisions here of male and female are not necessarily that of the Western binary, where these are in opposition to each other. To live in a balanced society as a centered individual, one must be mindful of the powerful forces of our universe. The thoughtful, balanced way of living for all humans is peace. We are all capable of nurturing, just as we are all capable of destructive behavior. Going to war might be necessary, but it should always be a decision that is mindful of the human cost. In 1975, the folklorist and anthropologist Dennis and Barbara Tedlock wrote in Teachings from the American Earth, "In traditional life, where religion, medicine, and art are intertwined in a unity of purpose, the central principles in healing are return to the origins, confrontation and manipulation of evil, death and rebirth, and restoration of the universe." A second set of images represents artists who merge tribal traditions with a response to a national crisis by employing one or more of these responses to healing. So this is a hand-woven rug by Marilyn Scott, who is Diné, which you might know as Navajo. She lives in the Tuba City, Arizona area. It's approximately 6 feet square. This rug was woven shortly after she had a dream she felt compelled to fill. And it is currently on display at the Skip Maisel Indian Jewelry Store in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I'll give you the address if you want to go see it. This is a detail of the rug. The tribute rug incorporates a New York cityscape with the Twin Towers against an American flag background. Text that states, September 11th, up here at the top, and United We Stand. The flag is bordered by a bust of the Statue of Liberty and includes traditional chief-style geometrics. That's this section over here. On both sides of the rug, there are what they're called just geometrics that are recognized widely by Navajo weavers. They are dated by first phase, which is the simplest of the geometric patterns, second phase are more complex, third even more complex. So she's using that signature, as I call it, using an artistic signature, a representation of her work is clearly Diné. So she incorporates this recognizable design, borders New York City, creating a signature of Dene-ness in this piece. We should also keep in mind that as a textile, she is including another textile, that as a significant design element, that of the American flag. Scott creates a metaphor of inclusion, suggesting that Native people are woven into the fabric of America. This is one of the most enigmatic pieces I've found. It's a clay bowl with painted surfaces by Susan Fowell and Franzi Welgen. Both artists are known for their mix of pop art and satiric images that present an atypical approach to healing through a kind of confrontation and manipulation of evil. Follow along if you can. It has a start and finish here, and it's a little hard to see all the panels, but we have USA capturing Osama bin Laden. He is forced to undergo a sex change operation. He is thrown to the women of his country, where he escapes, gets to the United States, and after a series of fundraising activities, mostly panhandling, meets Rodney King and falls in love. More on that to come. As outlandish as this story is, the end result promotes fundamental Native American values. Evil is confronted and transformed. The opportunities and circumstances of the abusive power bin Laden wielded are taken away. And in this version, he, as a she, finds intimacy and a place in which to live. Because of this last scene of inclusion, bin Laden is returned to a society and lives. The story stands in sharp contrast to the actual events of finding and killing bin Laden, as well as the widespread celebration that took place in the U.S. after the news was made public May 1st, 2011. There's been a lot of discussion on the necessity of revenge as a means to heal Americans. David Barash and Judith Lipton wrote, "After being attacked, as America was on 9/11, victims often suffer subordination stress by employing the three R's, namely retaliation, revenge, and redirected aggression. We are essentially bowing to our biological need to feel better by passing the pain on to someone else." This slide compares the Osama Ken Barbie bowl to an impromptu sign made by Cheryl Stewart, who is a non-Native artist living in New York City. Stewart created this outside her home after the fall of the Twin Towers and continued the count of days until it was announced on May 1st that bin Laden had been killed. After a passerby made a paper contribution, you can see it down here, this is taped to the bottom, it says dead. The sign was donated to the 9/11 Memorial Museum. In contrast, the detail of the Osama Ken Barbie bowl gives this alternative conclusion, which, and I'll read this part right here. Discreetly, he moves to LA, creates an alias for himself, takes up roller skating, and cruises up and down the Venice boardwalk with a donation cup. And the arrow directs us to, a mostly bosom, and a cup there that says RE 9/11. And then another arrow that takes us to where he meets and falls in love with Rodney King, and then the dialogue bubble, which you could probably read, "We're all just getting along." To my mind, Falwell and Welgen use tricksterism in their act of artistically restoring the universe. Here, revenge is denied, and thus calls further attention to the historical pattern of America's revenge-taking against the savages or terrorists of the Manifest Destiny years. It becomes an even more ironic statement in light of the use of the name Geronimo as the code name for the military operation to locate and kill bin Laden. This was also made public with some misstatements and corrections in the days immediately following May 1st. The reaction from Indian country concerning the use of Geronimo was one of shock and dismay, another microaggression that privileged the colonizer's history of suppression of indigenous populations and overlooked that statistically disproportionate involvement of Native Americans in the U.S. military. Jeff Hauser, tribal chairman, speaking on behalf of the Fort Sill Apache, called for President Obama to make an apology for the code name and stated, "We are all grateful that the United States was successful in its mission against bin Laden, but associating Geronimo's name with an international terrorist only perpetuates old stereotypes about Apaches." A third basic premise: objects made from the living earth are themselves living. Peter Jones created this fired clay vessel with a decorative band utilizing traditional Onondaga geometrics and contemporary figures. As an Iroquoian artist, Jones draws upon the concept of Arenda The traditional Haudenosaunee belief that every living thing and every part of creation contains a spiritual force. This is a work in which the technique of its making augments the narrative meaning of the final product. Traditional pit firing allows smoke to build up, and artists often employ this process to color the clay. Like Marilyn Scott's chief blanket rug design, Jones uses a culturally relevant signature on this piece. The incised and textured rim has been documented on pottery of the northeast coast, predating the 17th century. To that rim, Jones adds two modeled figures, an airplane as a weapon of terror, and a human evocative of Edward Munch's painting titled The Scream. As a vessel with the potential of utilitarian purposes, Jones invites us to consider what it should contain. Perhaps such a vessel allows us to mourn our losses while holding our stories, one of the key phases of rebuilding our whole sense of self. Destruction is not absolute. Death is transformation. The wholeness of the vessel suggests our own wholeness as the product of transformation. For many who experienced the attacks of 9/11, their bodies, much as clay and water, were transformed, hardened by clay, colored by smoke. Like both Jewel James and Marilyn Scott, Gerald Clark's installation, The Task, is based on a dream after 9/11. In Clark's dream, he is arguing with God about the ways of the world that promote violence and the ineffectiveness of the world's religions to promote or protect peace. As a performance piece, Clark literally attempts to iron out the conflicts among the religions of the world, only to have his efforts recycle in a futile heap at his feet. So the way this works is that Clark has a lot of words on this very, very long strip of cloth that represent all of the world's religions, names, sacred beings, whatever it might be, they're printed on there. And they, as they pass through this elaborate construction, they go through these four books, so note the four colors, like in their earlier pieces, representing the four groups of mankind. When Clark does the installation, he stands here and he irons, trying to get this all worked out, but of course it passes through and then comes back and it's a mess. Clark also said that in the dream, God's response to Clark suggests that there's more unity in the world's design than we as humans are capable of seeing. Clark has stated that since this dream and the making of the installation, he experienced a greater sense of calm and a much stronger sense of inner peace. So this is certainly one piece that works as a healing artistic process for the individual. It happened to all of us. Despite the tendency to think of Native Americans as still encapsulated in the 19th century, the events of 9/11 were far-reaching and inclusive, affecting all Americans, regardless of ethnicity. For the artists of this last category, America is home, filled with all that is familiar and good. Home is a diverse place where tradition lives, even as we experience the innovative and new. Home is where we live, in all the layers of that intending metaphor, the actual structure we return to for solace, the national identity we carry collectively and individually. For Emil Hermeni Horst's home includes the Lakota practice of mourning the loss of a loved one by creating a miniature teepee in which to keep the spirit of the deceased person close by a little while longer. When I talked to Emil about this process, he said that this was known to his family, that they would make a small teepee, so it's about 30 inches high. And the spirit of the deceased lives in that for probably about a year. And there's a great deal of protocol the family must maintain and in order to keep everything secure and stable during that time of mourning. And at the end of that period, then, the soul is released. And since my own family has gone through two losses in the last 2 years, I know this process resonates with me much more so. The teepee is, of course, traditional Lakota architecture, and so this home is decorated with the home of those who would recognize the New York City skyscraper, including the Twin Towers. Included on here, some things you might be able to make out, the flags again. This is an eagle. This says NYPD, and on this side is FDNY for the fire department. And then, of course, the date down at the bottom. So in this case, the healing gift of Hermeni Horst to America is community practice, a ritual of grieving through sharing. I've mentioned that this project keeps growing. which it does, and I hope that some of you might recognize the name. Allison Hedgecoke is a colleague of ours who teaches poetry down at University of Nebraska at Kearney. And she finally sent this photograph to me this last weekend. And I didn't know anything about it except for the title. So I was trying to scrutinize this small slide and understand what was going on. And then she called me this morning. So what I know is what I heard this morning, that what she had in mind, this is a mixed media piece, and of course it represents a member of the fire department. You might be able to tell that there's what looks to be some faces in here. There are also some figures up at the top that she calls them ghostlies, that they are, in some cases, suited individuals. They're still hard for me to see. I'm going to have to go visit her soon. But she said she was inspired by the images that she was seeing on TV. They made her reflect back to when she was a kid watching horror films, and she mentioned in particular the Night of the Living Dead. You might know that one. So I don't have too much to say about this one other than the images on TV after 9/11 brought back many of those frightening, unreal images which she presents in this mixed media work. There's a scholar of poetry, Grove Day, who refers to early Native American poetry as making use of Indian commonplaces. And I always think of that concept when I look at this piece, this view of New York City by Melissa Benali. Again, it's the skyscape of New York. In this case, though, Melissa is also Navajo Diné from the desert southwest. And if you've seen their traditional homes, the Hogans, the eight-sided homes, they have rounded roofs. And she has converted the New York skyline into a series of rounded-topped skyscrapers. So I love the fact that she's taken what she knows is familiar and put that onto New York. New York is home. We all belong to this place. I think it's an especially powerful statement, given that this is from a child. Melissa was 10 years old when she wove this rug. This is another rug, United We Stand Skyline Rug, and it was included in exhibit and catalog by the American Craft Museum of New York City that was titled Changing Hands, Art Without Reservation 1. Smith, also known as Winnie James, created this rug with an amazing photorealistic depiction of the Twin Towers as a fundraiser for the education of children affected by the September 11th tragedy. So I wanted to just have you reflect back on all three of the rug weavers, Scott, Benali, Smith, all utilized their textile making process to refer to another textile, the American flag. All three include a depiction of the intact Twin Towers. The two adult weavers, Scott and Smith, also include text. United We Stand and the date are common. Scott commented on this work for the Changing Hands exhibition by stating, "This was the hardest rug I've ever done. It was tough to rebuild the Twin Towers in this rug because there was a lot of death involved in those buildings. I'm a superstitious person, so it took a lot of discipline to weave it. The only reason I did it was to support education. I donated a lot of my time to help the children of the victims." Scale is very misleading here. This is a silver plate of about 6 inches, so it's pretty small. This is by Floyd Vicente, also Diné. "By placing members of his community in both roles of victim and rescuer, Vicente creates an alternative scene of Indian commonplaces or America as home. In his vision, the attacks literally happened to his Diné community. Not an unlikely scenario, since there were Native Americans involved in building the Twin Towers, were present during the attack, and were involved in the recovery efforts. In fact, there are two more artists that I'm not going to be showing you today that were also recovering participants. One was part of a Zuni hotshot team, and the other was a former iron worker whose family had a long tradition of building the Twin Towers. He was there as part of the ironwork cleanup. And in this one, here is a Navajo woman, and she's clearly recognizable by she wears a traditional Diné clothing and hairstyle. She is being held up by what appears to be a guardian angel. The firefighter here has a kind of unusual hat, and it reminds me a great deal of the campesinos or the migrant workers of the agricultural areas in the Southwest. Again, note that there's a American flag on top of the tower. But there are also some elements that are really anomalous compared to any of the things I've seen depicting New York City. In this one, we clearly have a tower in the act of being destroyed. There is the presence of Jesus, We have, of course, the guardian angel. There's another smaller being over here, which could be a representation of a spirit of some kind. And what I surmise is the hand of God with some uncertain intent. So I'm not sure what Benali meant or Vicente meant by some of these things. He has multiple, even contradictory meanings, but one that still integrates his tribal community with that of the New York City and United States. So for my final example, this is Jenny Ann Taylor's beaded American flag titled Nations. This piece is a focused and deeply encoded symbol of our shared indigenous and settler history. Beaded on a custom-made loom, the piece is approximately 20 by 24 inches. And I know there's some beaders out there who are calculating this now. Bead loom, 24 inches. It's a big piece. And incorporates text with both the use of high and low contrast colors. The stars here are replaced with postal abbreviations. So we have them in, do you see the big white block letters? The first 13, you can't see in this photograph very well, but they also have a red bead to designate them as the 13 original colonies. They also have, in the low contrast, the year that they became a state. Also in the lines in between, there's a lot of text which is really hard to read. I don't even have the full text yet, but it includes a quote from an elder by the name of Hollowhorn, a quote from another Huron elder, and a personal statement: all omissions and mistakes are my own, and I am proud to be an American, right here across the bottom, Jenny Ann Chaput, Ute, 9/11/2001. So the red and white stripes then, again, some of them are hard to see, but the red and white stripes have the names of 456 tribes in alphabetical order. For Taylor, healing is a patriotic statement that integrates. Tribal nations are indeed the fabric of the United States. So I'll offer my conclusion. Art is healing. Not absolutely. Not for all viewers. Healing is a condition upon our choosing to engage with a work of art that assists us in the process of recreating a whole self. But the potential for empowerment, reconnection, and recovery through art is clearly evident in the work of this group of artists. There is patriotism and criticism here, but collectively there are significant concerns for the easing of grief. There is thoughtful acknowledgement of pain for Americans who have and still are suffering due to the events of 9/11. There is inclusion in a national family, and for calls to action that simultaneously heal Americans and elevate the issues of Native Americans to mainstream American consciousness. In short, to rephrase Judith Herman, who I quoted earlier, on the phases of recovery, these works assist all Americans in reconstructing a personal and national identity, mourn our traumatic losses, and reconnect us with our cultural differences and histories to society, that which is America. Thank you.